Like I said, you know, I didn't feel like I was risking too much.
I'll set Jay. If you guys are ready, I'm going to call to order the December 7th meeting of the Conservation, December 7th, 2021 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission. It is 6:02, and our first order of business is roll call. Mary Talbot Rabiano, Matthew Bradywood. Lorraine Jubert, Christopher O'Connor is not here this evening, Vern Wyman, and we still have a vacant seat. I am David Flanders, and with us is Jason Parker, Principal Planner. Next order is the approval of minutes for the November 2nd, 2021 meeting. Does anybody have any comments, changes, suggestions? So if we're good to go, I'll accept a motion to accept the minutes.
To accept the minutes from last week as they're written.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And passes the minutes. No old business. For new business, we're going to continue our discussion on aquifer and water quality protection. One question that we had last week, and I think, Jason, you're going to see what you could find out about this, is what are the exact zoning specs for these overlays, for the aquifer overlays?
For the groundwater protection overlays?
Charge areas, yep.
Or
the groundwater reservoirs, yep.
I'll be honest, it's been a crazy month, and I hadn't had a chance to look at it, but I can skim through the ordinance while I'm talking to you, if you...
That was the only holdover that I had, unless anybody else wants to, I mean, you know, make reference to what North Kingstown wrote, and or does anybody know if they've made any progress with that? I have not contacted Tim Cranston. You said you knew him, and...
Lorraine, can you? Is the mic on? Just make sure if we don't speak into the mics, it doesn't come up at all on the recorder.
I contacted Tim Cranston. Actually, he contacted me first because we had made some recommendations on that ordinance when they first began changes several years ago. But he specifically asked for recommendations on their nutrient loading section. They have a provision that requires that a new development or business meet a 5 mg/L nitrogen standard in the leachate from the septic system and from the property in general. So I updated those standards and the recommended nutrient loading provisions, criteria from each of the different types of land uses and septic systems, and sent it to him and asked him when he was ready, would he be willing to share the ordinance, but he didn't send anything, and I didn't see it online in any of the meeting minutes dealing with the ordinance. So I didn't feel it was appropriate for me to ask him as a Conservation Commission member, but maybe, Jason, if you want to shoot him an email and ask him, maybe he would send it to you.
Is this something that Tim is doing with, you know, just writing an ordinance and then maybe sending it to the Conservation Commission or the Town Council?
It's under review. So he worked on the changes with the Planning Board, and it's under review by the Planning Board. And then it would have to go, it's in zoning, so it would have to go to the Council for their approval.
Good. I do hope we get to see that.
Well, eventually when it's approved, we can.
Right.
But I hated to ask him.
I yeah.
feel it was appropriate again.
So, David, to answer your question, the GOPD, the GPOD, Groundwater Protection Overlay District, primarily restricts certain uses in that zone related to heavy industrial or commercial uses such as gasoline stations, automotive repair shops, auto body, welding shops, junkyards, fuel dealers, metal plating, incinerators, things of that nature. It also goes on to prohibit underground storage tanks except for 1-2 household single and 2 household dwellings with certain conditions for those properties.
Did they mean septic storage?
That is fuel, underground storage for fuel. Some other limitations there for fuel, storage of road salt, parking of vehicles for fuel delivery vehicles, vehicle washing, motor freight terminal. There are, and then it following the use restrictions, it goes on to describe site design standards for all new and substantially reconstructed uses other than single family and two family dwellings that relates to storage of hazardous or toxic waste, storage tanks for petroleum products, interior floor drains, dumpsters, rainwater collected upon permanent roofing over 1,500 square feet needs to be directed to dry wells. Stormwater runoff from parking lots, streets, loading areas, and other surfaces subject to contamination from de-icing materials or petroleum products shall be collected and discharged. It gives out 6 different scenarios for how that stormwater should be handled. Prohibits garbage disposal systems and sinks in areas not serviced by public sewer.
We've done that here too.
Requires that at least 20% of the area of each lot shall be covered with existing or introduced vegetation. Commercial earth removal is prohibited, excluding construction of new farm ponds, drainage structures, and farm roads, and any use which would utilize a septic system or multiple systems serving the same use or a combination of uses on a lot for which the sewage flow exceeds 2,000 gallons per day. That's primarily what the ordinance touches on. There may be, as a former zoning official, I can see that this would be difficult to perhaps enforce. Because on a day-to-day basis, it's just another section of the code that you have to look in. And you're used to looking in the primary sections, and then for someone to say, oh, that's GOPD, oh, wait, there's another one. I can see how something like that might get missed. And the restriction on the landscaping for 20% must be existing or introduced, again, that's another caveat that the zoning official would have to be in tune to in that zone to require.
Now, is that something that normally the planning board would pick up on when plans came before them, or?
Good question. I don't know. I can't recall any recent ones that were specifically located in the GOPD, GPOD, GPOD. But yes, it would be. Having done this in three towns, having worked in zoning and planning in 3 different towns, the nature of the ordinance is commendable. Whenever you have a section somewhere else, it makes it really hard for people to remember. Because most of the time, somebody comes in and says, hey, what can I do? Or I'm going to do this. You flip to the zoning ordinance, you look in a certain section on the uses and the dimensional and all that stuff. Then you come. I'm not saying that Jamie doesn't, but if it was, I don't know how you do it, but if it was presented in a more upfront manner and not buried halfway through the ordinance, it might be. It does not take away from the importance of it or the fact that it is in there. It is in there. Just
that is a good point.
And this is not the only example. There are numerous cross-references to things between in the zoning ordinance, in certain sections of the different sections of the zoning ordinance itself. And we see it in the subdivision regulations where there's a contradiction in the subregs and zoning. We try to flag it so that at some point we can collectively go in and correct some of them. But it does make it difficult when they don't jive. And I think that's a product of changes over time and not getting caught up, not doing a full review of what we have. I would venture to say that there is probably some obsolete requirements in the ordinance, or things that, you know, were well-intentioned but doesn't really apply. But that's a pretty big, that's a heavy lift to go in and try to reconcile all of our regulations to make sure that they do not conflict with each other.
Well, actually, I'm surprised that it's as extensive as it is. I mean, I brought up the subject because I, you know, after reading about North Kingstown, because I was totally ignorant about, you know, what we were doing. So that's interesting.
When you read it, it what jumps out at you is it primarily provides or prohibits certain uses that we don't want. And then the language that's after it was well-intentioned and meant to apply. But I would have a feeling that, again, as a former zoning official, you would think the uses are restricted without knowing that there are other nuances in the ordinance that further restrict properties in there above and beyond just the use.
Now, the ordinance is strictly a GPOD ordinance?
Yes.
Okay.
It's an overlay district.
So if it were such that some use is going to be proposed for that thing, is there any way to make the ordinance a little more upfront, plainer language?
I don't know. And, you know, I should preface this by saying I don't know for a fact that things get missed. I mean, the zoning official might have a checklist in his head that he goes use table, dimensional table, and then, oh, it's in an overlay. Go to the overlays and scroll through that lengthy list.
Yeah.
I would have to talk to Jamie. I'd have to talk to the zoning official and see how well it's implemented or if it serves him well in what he does in his day-to-day duties. But I can certainly, and I apologize for not being prepared on this tonight, but I can certainly download this as a PDF and email it to everyone so that they can read it and perhaps
come up with some suggestions.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that.
If I may, it's interesting to note that several towns have recently updated their ordinances or are in the process. So Hopkinton, several years ago, integrated their groundwater overlay into zoning, so it wasn't an overlay district. So that might be a good example to see how that worked out. To me, it's always a little frustrating having to read everything in zoning by keywords rather than just going to a groundwater overlay. But that's what theirs is. So maybe that was done to help with enforcement.
It was an overlay and it's no longer an overlay?
The first time they adopted it was integrated into zoning, not as an overlay.
Not as an overlay.
Yeah, that was several years ago.
Yeah, and the concept of an overlay helps because you're looking at a smaller defined area. So conceptually, it's easier to remember.
Well, they actually adopted the whole town as one type of overlay with minimal restrictions, and then groundwater recharge areas and wellhead protection areas as another area. And then North Kingstown may come up with some interesting things. Westerly recently updated their overlay district, and they included more on, we worked with them on that one a little bit, on low-impact development, to ensure that there's more vegetation left on the land to promote infiltration, and emphasized increasing the infiltration, the clean infiltration to groundwater to maintain recharge. Richmond has expressed interest that they're planning on updating theirs. So it might be kind of interesting to see how these other communities shake out, and then we'd have the benefit of seeing what they've done, because it's going to be a big job, and why start in the dark if other communities are taking a look also? North Kingstown has a pretty powerful section that regulates groundwater loading. So if you had a new business coming into the G-Pod and they had a discharge that had nitrogen at higher levels, even from a septic system, and also taking into account lawn area and fertilization and recharge, they'd have to show that the leachate going in across the property is an average of 5 milligrams per liter or less. And that's been pretty effective, I think, in North Kingstown in limiting nitrogen inputs.
Do you know how they assess that? Do they require, how do they?
They have a calculation. So they have that table of nutrient loading factors that I mentioned. And then they have a calculation that they have to use. It was originally developed by Horsley Witten. So it's basically like a dilution thing. Pretty straightforward.
Dual what?
It's like a dilution model where, you know, what's going in and how does it get diluted by the recharge.
Does staff do that on behalf of the applicants or the applicants
have to? The applicant has to do it. They hire consultants.
Required engineer?
Yeah, the staff reviews it. Maybe they hire a consultant if they feel they need to. It's mostly for bigger projects, not, certainly not individual residential, but mostly commercial and maybe subdivisions.
Interesting.
I can't think of any other place that would have that potential, though, than the Fairgrounds Road area or some of those other areas near the train station that may have commercial potential.
And you have Larkin's Pond right near there.
Right. But most of those businesses seem to just have a septic system that deals with sanitary waste, and any other waste, you know, would not be something hazardous going into the groundwater. Even the grow operation was recycling everything internally. I mean, that would have been a concern if they were discharging fertilized water into the ground, but they were recycling everything.
Mm-hmm.
Another interesting thing in Hopkinton, they had rules against underground storage tanks in wellhead protection areas that were more protective than DEM. But they found that there was a gas station gas station restaurant thing that was proposed where there was no wellhead protection area, but by having a public well there that runs the business, they would have created a wellhead area. So they were talking about revising their ordinance that if anything was proposed that required a new wellhead protection area, they would be subject to the requirements of the ordinance as if it was already there. And that was very contentious for a long time.
Was it adopted?
I don't know if they changed it, but the application never went through. They gave up after a while. So there are a lot of things to think about. Some of them may not be issues that would come up in West Kingston.
Well, let's go ahead and look at what Jay's going to send us for the G-Pod info, but I also like your idea of waiting certainly to see what North, they're so far ahead of, you know, anything right now. Let's at least wait to see what North Kingstown does and what that looks like, and then bring it up again. But, in the meantime, let's take a look at, the G-Pod ordinance. Just see. It may just be poorly organized. I mean, there might be a way just to organize it better. But I don't know. So let's table this for now until we get more information. And then else, when you or anyone else feels like it's time to start discussing things, even with just looking at the ordinance, we'll just put it on the agenda. Now, Jade, because this is just discussion, we don't need a motion here or anything, do we? Okay.
No.
All right, I'm going to move on then. The 2022 annual meeting schedule, did anybody see any conflicts or anything?
And this always surprises board members every year. The town is required to file a tentative schedule of meetings for each board and committee for the year. It's tentative because things change, meetings get rescheduled, canceled, what have you. We don't necessarily need to go in and amend the schedule once that happens, but we are required to provide them with a list of anticipated meetings for the year.
So Mondays have been working out for everybody. Let's just move on. Correspondence and public comment. Discussion on a potential community compost program being considered by the Sustainability Committee. I got an email from a planning board member, in fact, the chair, who had been contacted by the, I don't know if he's the chair of the Sustainability Committee or not, but his name is Mark D. Moranville. And he just basically wanted to run by her the idea of, a community compost. So she forwarded it to me, and I got back to him essentially relaying our discussion and what we felt the obstacles were. And in the meantime, I thought of another obstacle, or if it's really going to be a community program, aside from the maintenance of the actual compost pile, we need to have participation. I mean, I fill our, 2-quart compost pail maybe every day and put it into our bins. There's no incentive for me to schlep it to anywhere, even if it were, Curtis Corner School. So the commercial compost pile in town, business, Earth Care Farm, they actually go out and get stuff. I mean, they don't rely on people to bring it to them. I don't see that as a workable thing. And so I don't know. We already covered most of these things. It was just that I thought of that. I have not heard back from him. This is a couple of weeks ago. And I wasn't negative. I just said, listed the various things that we saw as obstacles. So maybe they're going to continue it anyway. Maybe they're going to want a representative from our commission to be in on it and go into more depth about it. But like I say, I haven't heard back from him. So maybe he got, blown away by the obstacles. But I don't know. So that was the extent of the communication.
Curious to find out what the community demand for something like that is. So, like, folks like yourself that have a pile in their yard, why bring it to the community one? But there may be people who would like to compost, who don't have the space to.
Right.
And that would probably be the market, the demographic that the community compost pile would be attractive to. But I don't know how big that demographic is.
Well, another thing too is that
people that would like to compost are probably already doing so on their property.
Yeah. And compost, shrinks as it gets more viable. So how do you regulate, how much you brought in, how much you can, take from the pile? And I don't know. Mostly I just didn't want to get into it. I mean, it's just a nest of things to consider, and it's administrative, bureaucratic, and then the physical work. I mean, I think the town would have to hire someone to administer this and be the person to do the physical turning of it and all of that. And if that's something that other committees are interested in and want to pursue, I would recommend approaching the town and not, you know, individual volunteer commissions.
It's been a couple of years since I've staffed the Sustainability Committee, but this was a topic that was has been brought up since I've been here for 3 years, going a little over 3 years now. And I think you're right. They're proponents of composting, but the hurdles that they would have to overcome, securing a space, staffing it, making sure people don't bring garbage and bring non-compostable items.
Right, even meat scraps.
Right. So at the time, their efforts, they were resolved to using it as more of an educational platform to educate people as to how to do it. And they did that at their sustainability forum. Is that what they call it? I don't know if they've had them since the pandemic started, but they had an annual sustainability. I believe it was called a forum, but it was a workshop.
It's not the Land and Water Summit.
No.
Okay.
No, this was put on by the Sustainability Committee, and that was a topic where a Sustainability Committee member did a presentation on how they do it at home and what they do. But I think you're spot on. The hurdles that you have to overcome, just from the physical standpoint, and then the secondary is the incentive. What would make people want to do it if they could do it in their backyard? Which I think is why they resolve to education and being effective and saying, "Look, you can do this at home if we don't have the means to do it at a community level." But I think the concept is certainly has merit. I just don't know if there's enough there to.
Well, you know, I could see an individual elementary or middle school doing a thing like that. I mean, mine is just a three-bin deal that I made with, you know, chicken wire and 2x4s and such. And so you have your three stages of compost. And, you know, it's not large, but it's certainly more than we need. And a school could easily do that for educational purposes. And I mean, kids would want to volunteer to do that kind of work. As far as regulating, I mean, and kids could bring, you know, stuff in literally every school day. So that might be, you know, a model that could be pursued.
Yeah, having three kids, I would be a little cautious about having them come into school with their scraps from home, but God knows what would happen on the bus on the way in.
It'd be interesting if, well, does anyone know if URI does anything like this? Like,
your mic.
Actually producing it.
Ryan, yeah. Can you turn your mic? Is your mic on? And try to speak close to the mic if you could. Thank you.
Yeah, in it's now over 3 years ago that I was there, but we did explore that because we were creating a product in one of our dining halls from the cleaning process and the breakdown of some of the paper products that were in there. That was a slurry that could be used to build the basis for composting. And but it became complicated from the perspective of, at the time, of whether or not that would be, how would you store it, where it would be, and what would the material, you know, that you're building a form of landfill almost, you know, that you've got that product there and you got to control any leaching from that product in its premature mode and whatnot. So it became very clear that it was going to be complicated. Now, I think it's probably more widely accepted now, you know, nationwide, but whether, I'm not sure of its status over the last 3 years, even though an awful lot has gone into, URI has done a lot in terms of you know, not only energy use, but controlling its waste streams and managing those differently. That new facility they have on the lower end of the campus, too, is helped them better sort, pre-sort everything very precisely before it goes for recycling versus waste removal. So But I can't say I'm current on that information. But we did explore it. I can't get away from saying we after 40 years there. So bear with me.
Yeah, I mean that seems like the ideal application for it. It's a place that's generating food waste every day.
Landscape waste, which
but even a yeah exactly, but even an elementary school, you know, on a small scale. But if we're approaching it like a community garden type of thing, that's trying to get individuals involved. It just it feels a lot less viable.
I agree. But again, the educational thing, if a school wanted to take that up, I think that's the right place and right use for it. And, you know, for instance, the high school started a school community garden that was very viable, and that would be a perfect place to do it. Certainly had enough interested kids who were, you know, working it and would do that.
Shout out to John O'Malley.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. Yep. Let's move on. Update from staff on planning department activities, Jay?
If we just go back to that last agenda item, is there an action associated with it, or we just take this off?
It was a report that I was making in correspondence. And so I don't think it required any motion.
Okay. Any desire to reach out to the Sustainability Commission for more information, or no, or wait
to
hear back?
I'd like to hear back from them.
First?
And yeah.
Okay.
Because if that's something they're keeping an active item, then I'd be willing to, you know, or whoever wants to meet with them and, you know, discuss the whole thing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And by the way, further on correspondence and public comment, I'm going to ask let's say Mary to talk about the magnet fishing that was loosely sponsored by Friends of the Saugatucket. Bill McCusker, I think, led the charge.
A few weeks ago on a Sunday afternoon, there was a little meeting of the Friends of the Saugatucket to discuss or demonstrate magnet fishing. So magnet fishing involves industrial magnets and catching metals that are in the river. So this person who did it is Bill's son, I believe.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And he's heavily into it. It's a big hobby of his, and he's found numerous items. And he actually pulled a bike frame out of the bridge, off of the bridge, the day we were there. So.
And is it just one line that you haul up, or is it a pole of some sort?
They required two magnets to get it out of the water this time, but they're fairly large magnets, and it's kind of interesting. I don't know if it would be something that, you know, everyone would want to do, but I'm sure that people who sell junk metal would be heavily into it.
I passed on it.
I mean, it'll pull it right out of the silt.
Cool.
Was this intended to promote this among the general public?
I think it was to instill an interest, and possibly, you know, they might want to use it as a cleanup sometime or other, like when it's warmer or something. They didn't have a very good turnout because it was kind of very cold that day. So they had, you know, big wet gloves and all that kind of stuff, and it's like, should have been yesterday when it was 65 degrees.
No, I've seen him and his son on that bridge doing just that, and I thought it was pretty cool. Jay, update from staff on planning department activities?
Nothing much to report. Pushing through a backlog of applications that just seem not to progress as fast as you'd like them to. And nothing that jumps out to me at the moment in regards to Conservation Commission efforts.
Report from the duty member on prior month's TRC meeting, that would be me. Basically, the applications that came before us fell into different categories. One was that they'd been there once and were asked to make changes to the plan, and this is all before it goes to the planning board. The other was, there were at least one withdrawal of the application, and another was tabled. And then the other category is, which is an overlap of the first, is TRC recommending to pass it on to the planning board with conditions. In other words, we've talked about these things you should do, because the planning board is going to want to see them. So rather than come back to TRC, it would go to the planning board as a conditional approval. So I could go over these. I mean, there are things like Burger King wants to add a second lane in their driveway. Vern talked about this, so it came back to us. And there were still some questions like how to merge the two lanes, about adding a bioretention area, and requiring signage about queuing up for the, who goes in what lane. So a conditional approval was granted for that.
David, sorry, I just need to correct you on that. That was tabled. That was tabled to this meeting tomorrow.
Okay.
And since that time, we've identified the fact that sometime around the improvements to Old Tower Hill Road, they removed all of their vegetation.
Yep.
And unbeknownst to them and me at the time of the TRC meeting, that vegetation was previously required and approved by the planning board.
Okay.
So they're going to have to go back to the drawing board and probably incur quite an expense in replacing that vegetation, because the vegetation was 20 years old and was serving the purpose that it was meant to at the time. And the planning department at this point is not in favor of replacement with immature trees, immature vegetation.
Yeah.
So I think what we're going to request of them may not be received well, but I forwarded them a copy of their approved landscaping plan, and they removed it themselves, so it wasn't like it was our doing.
The rest of my report is going to resemble this, because I was also using the minutes that were taken and that Jay sent on to me, but my printer wouldn't print them out. It could read them and display them, but there's something, it wasn't connected to the internet. So my notes here are not as comprehensive as the minutes would be. So Jay may have to step in here a little more. Sand Hill Lane, a minor subdivision for one lot for development and one for conservation purposes. The owner wants a conservation easement, but he still wants to retain the ownership of this. After the two lots are articulated, it would go to the planning board. It needs to include monumentation for the two lots and street trees. So it was given conditional approval, providing those things to get taken care of.
And if I can just add to that, Lorraine, this was a little interesting because it was one lot being subdivided into two, and the created lot would have a conservation easement on it. So we kind of had a discussion that we really don't understand why you would do that. Why not just place the conservation easement on it and leave it as it is? But we managed to get the surveyor to admit that they're waiting for the wetland regs to drop to see what's going to happen so that they don't lose their ability in the future. So a large part of that discussion, 10 minutes of that discussion with TRC was, well, you need to either wait or make a decision now.
And now wait until July, not December.
Right. So, I mean, as she was avoiding the question, I just kind of said it. I said, so you guys are waiting for the wetland regs? She's like, yeah. Okay. But there was a discussion there about whether the septic system, the special use permit, was applicable. I won't go into great detail with that, but the way our regulations read, the leach field is the measuring point, not necessarily the septic tank. So while the septic tank was within 150 feet, the leach field was not.
So it would be under 504?
It would not be.
It would not be. The leach field is within
the... I'm sorry if I said that incorrectly. The leach field is outside, is greater than 150. The tank is within the 150.
There was an issue about 471 High Street, which is on the corner of Church Street. It was the former Welcome Market. And the guy wants to have it be a storage and, I believe, office space, personal storage. So there were all sorts of problems with the what is on the site and what the plan showed. And basically, they're not in sync. They don't reflect what is actually there. Four parking places are required. There's no dumpster shown. Asphalt was paved without a permit. And water quality is to be addressed at this point. And the whole thing was tabled to tomorrow. South County Trail. McKellar Court, we asked them to move the driveway and to add monumentation. There was an issue with the guy who presented the application. Sounds like he is the developer, but the owner of one of the lots, he continues to remove the monuments. And so it was addressed, well, now what are we going to do, and who's responsible for that? But at any rate, there was a great discussion on the no-mow zone for the property, and what is it to be? How can you, delineate it if the guy's going to continue to remove monumentation? So, but that got passed on with a conditional approval to the planning board. The Matunic Beach condos, which we discussed last time, the units were moved to the east out of the floodplain. The sidewalk, was it already changed, or did we want them to change it to permeable? Had that been done?
I think that was something that they had...
They were willing to do it.
Yeah, they had mentioned it previously, and I think it showed up on that plan.
And they did correct what you mentioned, Vern, the sightline profiles of the original vegetation. The bushes are taller. The grass is now drought-resistant. And Rich Bourbonnais brought up a whole bunch of issues at the end, and it sounded like he wasn't there at the previous meeting, or these were just things that he had done homework on and was apologizing all over the place for bringing it up at the last minute without any kind of conference beforehand.
I think what happened was he reviewed it. He kind of glazed through it, but he didn't produce anything in writing and didn't get in contact with the applicant prior to that meeting. So he didn't want to take the rug out from under him, under the applicant at the time, and drop it on him. But so that ended up getting continued for that reason, so that Rich could write down his comments and provide it to them.
I noted it was tabled till tomorrow as well. The residences on Holly Street, I think you might have talked about that too, because this sounded like a comeback. People were rather favorable to it, to the changes in the architecture, adding the porches, changing the tree plant. Oh, that was one thing that they had not done yet, was changing the tree planting specs to the town's specs. Union Fire District was going to go out and look at the fire hydrants. Apparently, the there has to be one hydrant at least 600 feet from the nearest point of the development. It sounded like, yes, a conditional approval was granted, one of which was that they were to to town tree planting specs. And there were two people who live in the area who, under public comment, wanted more vegetation all over for the project. And I noted that the meeting was adjourned at 12:24, which made it a 3-hour and 24-minute meeting.
Sorry.
So that's my report. If you have anything more to add?
No, I have a suggestion. Since this is fairly new to the commission, perhaps a good approach for attendees, Conservation Commission duty members attending the meeting, when they're in attendance and when they report out, instead of running down the list, an all-encompassing list of what the projects are, maybe a statement or recognition of what components of the application would interest the Conservation Commission.
Okay.
Drainage, landscaping.
Yep.
Anything that's within your purview. I'm here. I could always, if you want edification, further edification on an application or a project, I can give a little bit of a rundown that you did. But I think it may help structure duty members in understanding, okay, what can I really look for? What value can I bring in participating in the TRC from the Conservation Commission's perspective? Obviously, we wouldn't expect Mary or anybody to talk about traffic circulation or having a concern with sighting sight lines, but
well, one thing we could do is send electronically the TRC minutes and have members just underline anything that we had a concern about, and then it could come up. Would that work?
How would that?
In other words, our members could look at and say, "Oh, your vegetation. Oh, permeable driveway," and you know, highlight that and make that, you know. If there's any further discussion on that point, just to give a heads up. So the presenter doesn't have to run through all the particulars.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just taken back by minutes, because then it's already in the past. The minutes reflect what was already reviewed.
Right.
What would you be?
Well, it's like what I was doing now. I was just going through. My report is a summary, and oftentimes it's called not minutes, but review or something, right? The meeting summary.
Oh, summary, TRC summary.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think very simply, it could just be the duty member reporting out by memory what, you know, were there any applications where there were stormwater considerations that.
Yep.
Conservation Commission would feel strongly about.
No, that can work.
Plantings, vegetation, things of that nature. And in doing that, it may help gear up duty members as they get more familiar with it to recognize when an application comes in, oh, maybe they could do that better. Maybe you should, you know, on those topics.
Yep. That's a good idea. Designation of duty member for tomorrow, December 8th meeting. Matt has agreed to do that. We have, again, four members who are willing to be in rotation. And so I filled in for Matt last time, and so he's doing a turn now. It doesn't have to be in any specific order. We have a lot of flexibility in that. If somebody can't do it, they can't do it. And hopefully one of the other three can do it. So I'm willing to keep that, you know, fairly loose. But, you know, thank you for all, you know, you, Vern, and Matt, who have stepped up and done that. So,
since the timing is frequently bad when it comes to your Conservation Commission meeting and the TRC meeting, i.e. our meeting tonight and then TRC tomorrow.
I think next year it happens either once or twice.
I was going to suggest maybe it might be good to ask for somebody for the following month. It would give me an idea of who's getting the packet.
Sure.
Before, you know, as we assemble them. I mean, that might be a good practice.
And okay.
Did you get your packet, by the way?
Yeah.
In the agenda?
Yep.
There's another 2 pages of the agenda with another 11 items in my office that I need to get to.
I hope you're joking. Next meeting date is January 2nd, and if anybody has any, further agenda items other than what we're going to continue, if there's anything like that.
I haven't looked. I don't know if the council is meeting on January 2nd. I should probably look, because if that is the case, then we may get bumped, or we might be in the small,
move into the room.
Yeah. Small conference room. Okay.
There were some times, by the way, when we met down in the building official's office, because they had that old long wooden bench where anybody from the public could sit and speak, and the table was big enough.
I don't see a schedule of meetings for 2022 on Clerk Base, so I don't know what that is.
So February. No, February has a 9 days separation, so we don't need to worry about that this time. Before we adjourn, does anybody have any further comments? Anything to bring up? Miscellaneous? Okay.
I have a question that I think Lorraine might know the answer to. A while back, we had talked about a tree removal proposal on Barbers Pond Road. Do you know if what came of that?
That was denied. So they cut down 5 acres every shred of vegetation, but we gained one street tree. He had 30 feet to begin with for the entrance, and he wanted more.
No, I remember. I drove out and looked at it when it was
same here.
When it was coming to our attention, but I couldn't remember what had happened to it.
Yeah. Luckily, some of the neighbors, including those that don't live right in the neighborhood, went to the meeting. It was a Zoom meeting and commented, so it was great.
Of course, it won't prevent heavy equipment from driving by and crushing the roots or compacting the soil. But I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Oh, come on. You all want to. Okay. Vern made the motion. Anybody have a second? Second by Mary. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.